You're listening to 9 a.m. Edition on Super Talk Mississippi, 97.3 and 99.3.
August 16th on a Wednesday, Super Talk Mississippi, 97.3 and 99.3. Big time radio show today. It's Michael Mergens, our studios in Hattiesburg. Luke Johnson joins me from Laurel. Morning, Luke.
Good morning, Michael. Happy National Airborne Day. 2001, President Bush set this in place to commemorate our brave soldiers that jump out of planes and take care of business.
Okay, I was going to say, does that mean that certain things get go airborne today? Because I have some computer work to do, and that might actually happen. Okay, that's much better, though. Is that all we got, Airborne Day?
We got I didn't want to demean National Airborne Day. It's National Tell a Joke Day. So I'll be looking up. I may start off each segment with some corny joke, you know, okay. One of those.
Gotcha. And, of course, the 40th anniversary of Elvis's passing. There you go.
That's all. Really? On National Tell a Joke Day?
Yeah.
Wow.
And that's no joke. But, everyone's talking about, where were you when Elvis died? My mom tells a story. She was washing diapers, because back in the 70s, kids, there's people that used cloth diapers. I keep telling that to my wife. We should use cloth diapers. And the horror and look of disgust on her face, like, what? What are you talking about? In fact, there was a diaper service in my hometown of Rockford, Tidy Dighty Diaper Service. And they delivered and picked up and cleaned cloth diapers, which are still the best way to polish a car, by the way, if you can find them anywhere. But, you know, that's what my mom was doing when Elvis passed away. She heard it come over the phone. I was still in the hospital, so I was in an incubator at the time. But we'll talk more about that coming up this hour. Also, we're going to be talking about Worldwide Carry Day, which is tomorrow, the 17th, celebrating the 256th birthday of William Carey. Of course, every Wednesday at 9:30, we showcase William Carey University. And we're going to be talking to Dr. Benny Crockett and Dr. Myron Noonkester, and just kind of getting into who William Carey was. We talked about all the curriculum and the various things happening at William Carey. Now we actually get to learn about the guy, the namesake. I know he was a missionary. That's all I got. So we're going to get educated today at 9:30 on the program. But joining you in studio, Luke, let's just jump right into it. Always one of our favorite guests from Dixie Electric Power Association, Lydia Walters. Good morning, Lydia.
Good morning. And Michael, I have to start out by saying I completely agree with your wife. And yes, no cloth diapers.
Yeah.
I get it. They are great to dust furniture with, but no.
If you can find them. I look for them because I like to polish my guitars with them. I'll keep one in a case and I can't find them anymore. So yeah, that was a long, long time ago. But yes. I'll have to explain that to our child. Yeah, your grandmother was washing diapers when Elvis died. Huh? What? You wash those? Don't you
right.
throw them out? So, yes. 40 years. A lot can happen. So, Lydia, what's new at Dixie Electric Power Association?
Well, we're still, unfortunately, in the middle of hurricane season and have seen something, a little action south of us, but nothing headed our way, thankfully. So that's good. But just wanted to remind folks, you know, it's still time to get your family kits put together, make preparations. I was talking to some individuals recently and reminded them, you know, you don't have to build your hurricane family kit all in one day.
Yeah.
You can, every trip to the grocery store, you know, pick up some batteries, pick up some canned foods the next time. So,
because that's,
you know,
expensive stuff. You don't realize
it
till you're buying it.
Right. And so you don't want to do it all at one time, but you can continue, especially through August and September, to make preparations. And with that, if you're a Dixie Electric member, we would love for you to download our app, which is called Smart Hub. And we have directions on our website, DixieEPA.com, and also have little flyers in our offices our members can pick up. And it does a lot of cool things. One is you can pay your bill through it. Another is that you can look at your daily energy use. We had automated metering. Yep, Luke's going, really? And I was like, yeah, really. Yes, you can look at your daily energy use. We have automated metering, and so in your Smart Hub, if you have the app, or you can actually go to our website and log into Smart Hub through our website, and you can look and begin to get an idea of what your daily energy use is, which is great information, because then you kind of know, okay, it's higher on this day than it was on this day. You know, what happened on Saturday that didn't happen on Thursday? Probably you were home washing clothes. But, you know, you begin to get an idea of how much more energy you use when there's an additional person in the home, or, you know, what your activities do. And then you can really start making some good decisions on what you can do to save.
That's incredible, because always when I get mine, I just, you know, pause as I open it up and grit my teeth. And then I get sometimes this energy efficient report. Well, you use way more than others, you know. And I like that, because you can then balance your lifestyle, you know, around
exactly.
that. And one thing that you said last month that I have been doing, when I leave a room, I turn off my fan.
Good. That's very good. I mean, that does save. It really does. I went through this morning and turned 3 ceiling fans off before I left our house this morning. I mean, it's amazing what you think about that over the course of a year. If you leave them on every day, you're paying for that.
Yeah. And so, we've talked about this too. There's a misconception when it comes to ceiling fans. I'm trying to get my wife to understand this, because every time I go in the bedroom, the fan's on and there's no one else in there. People think that if you have them all on in your house, it's circulating the air through the house, and really they don't necessarily work that way.
No, they don't work that way at all. Ceiling fans cool people. They don't cool houses.
Yeah.
So they move the air across your skin, so they make you feel cooler, which is great if you're in the room, and by all means, turn it on. But when you're not in the room, it doesn't really do any good. So, so turn those off. The other thing about our Smart Hub app is that you can report a power outage with one click. So if your kids are home and they call and say, oh, my gosh, the power just went out, you can be at a restaurant and just simply click tap, and your power outage is reported to go straight to our dispatch center so that they can alert our serviceman to repair the power.
So wonderful.
It is. It is the easiest, quickest way, no stress way to report a power outage.
There's been times that I've waited on the phone longer.
Right.
Then the power was actually off.
Exactly. That's yeah. true. That's true. And you think about it from our standpoint, it is a lot quicker to get it through our dispatch center. So if you can report it through the app, and then it gets to us quicker, we can respond quicker. So it really just speeds up the whole process. And it also gives you a little note function in there, so that if you know the tree's down in your front yard, you can, you know, let us know that information if you have something specific for the serviceman. And then, of course, he'll get that information. So it's just an easy, easy way.
Amazing. Technology's
yeah.
awesome.
It's incredible.
You wanted to talk about that whole process, the power restoration.
Exactly.
Restoration process.
Exactly. So let's think about the power restoration process, and it has gotten quicker. That's the good news, but it's still a process. And if we have, and I'm talking kind of the process I'm about to describe as a major outage, like after a hurricane and we had, you know, multiple thousands of people out. If that is the situation, we go through a 5-step process. The first step of that are transmission lines. Now, we don't own transmission lines. Dixie Electric does not. Our wholesale power provider, Cooperative Energy, they're headquartered out of Hattiesburg. They actually have the generating plants and the transmission lines. So the first thing is to make sure we can get power. Those transmission lines bring power to our substations. Dixie Electric picks up responsibility for the power at the substation. So that's kind of the second part, is to make sure the substations are up and running, because there's that point we don't have power, there's nothing we can do
right.
about it, you know. So once we have power at the substations, then we go and we really focus on what are called 3-phase power lines. Now, if you kind of put it in the context of a three-phase power line, that's like a major interstate or a highway. That's like going down I-59 or Highway 84. I mean, that's kind of what a 3-phase power line is. It carries the most power to the most people. So it makes the most sense that that's the areas that we're going to focus on to get the power first. The next thing, once we get all the 3-phase lines repaired, is we get single-phase lines. That's lines that go down a road. Maybe they serve 10 or 12 houses. And then the very last thing we focus on are what we call single taps. That's an individual home, no more than one or two homes, and we work on those last. So the whole process is designed to get the most people back on as quick as we possibly can. And of course, we focus on areas where it may benefit a group of people, like the grocery stores or, you know, Lowe's or something
like
that.
That's the thing about it. You're not going to go to the last spot because you're helping more people by going to the bigger areas.
Exactly. And that's how we focus on it. And that's really what the plan in place. So unfortunately, if you're the last person on the line, you're going to be the last person back on.
You can go get building supplies. You can go get
grocery. Exactly. Gasoline. Like that. That's right.
So this smart hub app, I am blown away. I can check my power every day, Michael.
And that's better than looking at the wheel spinning on your meter trying to assume, well, it's going really fast. That must be using a lot of energy. This is a little more accurate.
Yes, it is. And you get it runs about a day to 2 days behind. So you know within a day or two what you used. And you just go to our website, DixieEPA.com, and we've got a link on there to explains how to download the app. You can also access it through the website under My Account as well.
Well, it makes a lot of sense, because if you're keeping up with your energy use, that's how you save money. And of course,
yes.
Lydia, always great to have you on the program. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Lydia Walters with Dixie Electric Power Association. It's 9 a.m. edition on Super Talk Mississippi, 97.3 and 99.3. Coming up at 9:30, our focus on William Carey. It's William Carey Wednesday. If you're a William Carey grad or support William Carey, make sure you're wearing red today. But we're going to be talking about the life of William Carey and more. Stay with us on Super Talk Mississippi.
On Super Talk Mississippi 97.3 and 99.3.
I want to thank Lydia Walters with Dixie Electric Power Association for joining us. Always great advice. And you got to keep up on that stuff. You get that electric bill, you complain if you kind of know what's causing what. Kind of the same thing with water, too. Get one of those crazy water bills every few months. Try to figure out what's going on. Man, you might have a leak somewhere and don't realize it, but keeping up with it, always smart advice. All right, so this is just my show prep is nothing but talks about, Baltimore removes Confederate statues, arrests made and toppling of North Carolina Confederate statue, President sucks. That's all it is. All over the place. Oh, man. This is the new norm. Let's laugh.
How does a squid go into battle?
I don't know. How does a squid go into battle?
Well armed.
Yeah, there you go. Where's my snare? There's no snare in my headphones. It is, yeah. Gosh. Yeah, we needed that. There's more
coming up.
Single break. At 9:30, we're going to be talking about William Carey. Not just the university, but the man, who he was. Because tomorrow is Worldwide Carey Day, celebrating the 256th birthday of William Carey, the namesake of William Carey University. Dr. Benny Crockett and Dr. Myron Noonkester are going to be joining us. In fact, Dr. Noonkester, his dad, served as Carey's president from 1956 to 1989. But we'll kind of just discover who Carey was. Like I said, I know he was a missionary, but that's all I got.
I've been privileged to travel to Calcutta, India, and I actually got to stay in his house, eat at his table, preach in chapel to the theological students, see where he baptized his first convert. Awesome life.
It is just incredible. So we'll get into that for our William Carey Wednesday. Make sure you're wearing plenty of red if you're a William Carey supporter or graduate. Kind of getting into this whole thing now, and I know the president said, well, both sides were at fault. I think we established that there were people there who were protesting peacefully who had intent to do that. And then I really think, as you said yesterday, Luke, that there were some people thrown into the works trying to just create anarchy. Facebook and Reddit are now removing any hate groups off there. And of course, the ACLU, usually when I say that, it's something that's negative to conservatives and all that, but they're staying true to their basic principle and saying that these hate groups, the neo-Nazis, and coming from Illinois, anyone, if you remember when Elvis died, you remember probably the situation with neo-Nazis in Illinois wanting to march in Skokie, and it went to court and they ended up winning, but they never actually ended up marching in Skokie. The reason they wanted to march there was it had a very large Jewish population as well as Holocaust survivors living there. So that was their main purpose. You watch the Blues Brothers, they basically make fun of that, but that was legitimate. So you've got these groups out there, and the ACLU is saying they have freedom of speech. They have their rights. So now all these people are going after the ACLU. But what I'm seeing on social media, and I actually unfollowed someone today because I knew their political leanings, but usually they never got political on Twitter. But essentially saying that if you are a Trump supporter, and look, the president doesn't really have a very good filter. I kind of got what he was trying to say when he said both sides were at fault. He just didn't articulate it very well. But this guy just went off saying that if you're a Trump supporter, you should die. And I'm like, wait a minute. This is where we're getting to. And that is why both sides are starting to get at fault. The liberal side, they're trying to claim that, and this is comes to the president, not simply what happened on Saturday. This is just anything that deals with the president, his policies, the conservative movement, because, of course, conservatives get lumped into all this, no matter what the president says, because the president ran as a Republican. So, boom, if you're Republican, you're hateful and spiteful. But what it's come down to is the other side now is using the same tactics by saying stuff like that. Where's the high ground? It doesn't exist. We're not going to see that anymore because both sides are basically just digging at the bottom of the barrel, trying to get their point across. And it's just going to be hate speech on both sides, which when you think about it, aren't we supposed to protest peacefully? You know, we have freedom of speech as long as it is not hateful speech or degrading to other people. But you can still have your opinion. We are not to incite violence or riots. And yet both sides now are when I say both sides, let me correct that. Please listen closely. The hate groups are doing that. When it comes to the conservative movement, it seems like they're kind of just shutting their lip right now because they know the president's going to probably say something out of context or that people are going to blow up, take the wrong way. When it seems like, and maybe I'm wrong, but just from my perspective, after seeing that tweet, that even the liberal Democratic side are just taking low blows. And it seems like that's the opposite of what's coming out of their mouth. They're acting completely uncivil in a lot of ways. So that surprised me when I saw that tweet. It's like, well, basically, you're doing the exact same thing by tweeting this that you're complaining about. Where's the line? And I think that line is just completely blurred and disappeared at this point. And this is the norm. So right now, yeah, it kind of is both sides, at least the ones who are being vocal and talking way too much. But it's just frustrating because I think we're beyond the peaceful tactics of decorum and civility.
I had a good friend of mine, one of my best friends in the world. We were discussing heated issues like this yesterday, and we have two different opinions on it. It was not specifically this, but it was a spinoff of this. And what was incredible was at the end, we're just like, hey, dude, love you, man. Love you, bro. Yeah. We're good, you know? And it was civil dialogue that was actually concerned about who you were conversing with. The point is, it doesn't matter, and I've said it numerous times, I'm not a President Trump Kool-Aid drinker. I support him because he's our president. I respect him because he's our president. I did the same thing for President Obama. I prayed for him, and I'm behind him. He's my president. I'm told to, you know, I'm supposed to respect him. I don't have to respect all his views, But what the problem is, it doesn't matter what President Trump will say. He came out, I believe it was Monday, I think.
Yeah.
He used the words KKK. He used the words white supremacy. He used the words neo-Nazi and condemned it in language way stronger than anything that Obama said.
Mm-hmm. Even when he, the initial one that everyone complained about, the media said, well, he didn't call out the white supremacists by name, so he must support them. Well, think back to President Obama. He basically said it in a way that Obama would have done it. But, of course, it's Trump, so we got to
Well, I mean, I was
on.
Frustrated with President Obama because at that funeral for those police officers, he tried to, you know, halfway... I mean, he talked about the crazies, but at the same time, then he talks about how not everything's bad and not all of these protests are bad. And he basically, in some ways, justified some of the activity that the crazier components of Black Lives Matter was going on. And that's acceptable.
Mm-hmm. Just as Trump, whatever, however he said it. And then you've got David Duke, who is, well, we're justified. The president supports us because the way he said it.
He didn't do it at all. He condemned David Duke.
Yeah.
But he spoke out against David Duke.
And, of course, the
what it matters is, this is how it matters in Hattiesburg and Laurel. If you're going to get in a conversation that deals with explosive issues like this, understand that when you engage that conversation, you better communicate to the person of the opposing viewpoint that you care about them and your end goal in life is not to win the argument. Right. Sometimes it's better to lose the argument and win the person.
Debate. The art of debate is gone. I know they still teach it and have debate classes in school, but those aren't the people who are getting into politics, it seems. Maybe they're probably the smart ones. They figured out, wait a minute, this isn't exactly what we were taught in school. But there is an art to debate where every side can be heard. That is the point. That's why it's studied. That's why they have debate class and debate teams, because it is the process by which you are trying to enunciate your beliefs in a way that can be counterpointed and either agreed upon or disagreed upon. I mean, I can't tell you how many pastors I know that usually do the, well, we have to agree to disagree. That's the way to do it, because everyone's going to have different ideas. That's our society. Of course, there's a large faction that want us to think all the same, believe all the same, act all the same. Communism, excuse me. Oh, excuse me. I don't know where that came from. But that's where we're at right now. And that's why this whole thing is a mess. I can't wait till it's over with. And no matter where you stand with the monuments being torn down, of course, they arrested those that did tear down that monument. And I think
they should have.
Yeah, they should. They committed a crime. And that, guess what side that is? That's the side trying to call for peace and appreciating everyone's differences. And they're the ones who did that. So no one's in the right now. And there's only one who is in the right and knows all. And you better start understanding him and following him like William Carey did. Nice segue, huh? We're going to talk about William Carey as 9 a.m. edition continues on Super Talk Mississippi. Stay with us.
Tuned in to 9 a.m. edition on Super Talk Mississippi 97.3 and 99.3.
August 16th on a Wednesday, Super Talk Mississippi 97.3 and 99.3, 9 a.m. edition. Michael Mergens, our studio is in Hattiesburg. Luke Johnson joins me from Laurel. You probably noticed that Luke has been on pretty much every day the program is. Jim Taylor has decided to focus on the Eagle Hour, which needs a lot of focus. There's so much going on constantly with Southern Miss that I can't even keep up with it. Just breaking news all the time. You have no idea, as a listener, the work that goes into that program. But he gets it done. He's on top of it. So Luke is the new go-to guy. Until he's off back doing mission work in India, then it's all me by myself again. But at least you're doing something worthwhile. And speaking of mission work, every Wednesday we do our William Carey focus. Of course, it's William Carey Wednesday, and no different today. But instead of talking about curriculum and the various things happening at William Carey, we're going to talk about William Carey. Not the university, the man, the namesake for the university. And tomorrow is Worldwide Carey Day, celebrating the 256th birthday of William Carey. And I'm going to allow our guests to introduce themselves because they have quite the titles and background. And we'll just start with who you are.
Myron Noonkester. I'm Dean of the School of Arts and Letters at William Carey, and I'm also co-director of the Center for the Study of the Life and Work of William Carey.
See, I already feel just completely stupid. When every guest we get in here, your titles are so long.
Oh,
me,
well.
Michael Mergens, operations manager, period. That's it.
And I'm Benny Crockett. I teach in philosophy and religion and co-director of the Carey Center as well.
That's, wow. The knowledge you guys must have, but especially focusing on William Carey. And Myron, you're the son of Dr. Ralph Noonkester.
Yeah, my father was president of the school for 33 years.
That's
so
impressive.
I'm familiar with the process whereby the old Mississippi Woman's College became William Carey College and was named for William Carey, the great British Baptist missionary.
So let's talk about William Carey for those that don't know who he was. I said earlier in the program, I know he was a missionary. But that's where it kind of stops, my knowledge of his life and really why the university was named after him.
One of the things that we've wanted to do with our project, whereby we've developed a museum, the Carey Center, devoted to William Carey, is that we want people to know that he was indeed an extraordinary missionary. But we also want people to know that he combined with his missionary activities a life of scholarship. He was a botanist, he was a linguist, and a social reformer. He was born in Pollersbury, Northamptonshire, in the British Midlands in 1761. He died in Serampore, India in 1834. He went to India in 1793, which meant that he spent about half his life in India.
Wow. That's really incredible for him to have done all that at that period of our history and being Christian, because that's really kind of radical to have been involved in all that.
He was radical, and he was radical not only in his theological commitment. His theology was very, very conservative. He was a classic Reformation Protestant, a Baptist, of course, but he was also a very committed social reformer. He was involved in Thomas Clarkson's sugar boycott against chattel slavery early in his life, and later in his life, he was committed to working, even in some cases with Hindus of goodwill, to abolish sati, or widow burning, in India.
Yeah. The fact that the mission work that he did in India, and Luke Johnson is no stranger to mission work in India. How many years have you been going to India, Luke?
This was my seventh year, about my 15th or 16th trip.
And you've had experience with William Carey's legacy there.
Yeah, absolutely. I was going to tell you guys, thanks for being on the program this morning. I was over in 2011, and Dr. King set me up with Dr. Lal Chenunga, who was the president of Serampore at that time. And we got to go and stay in the house, Carey's house. We got to see the museum there. We got to see where he baptized Krishna Paul there in the Hooghly, went to his grave. And I was doing some training a couple years later in Calcutta, and we were on campus of Carey Baptist Church. Now, you just talked about how radical William Carey was in his thinking. He signed a 500-year lease on a piece of property that is in prime-time downtown Calcutta now that houses Carey Baptist Church, where Carey and Marshman and Ward baptized Adoniram Judson. And I was just, oh, it was amazing. And there's a Bible college there. So this guy was a maverick in every sense of the word.
Usually when you hear lives like this, what led Carey to this life of mission work and just all the various things that he did?
Some of Carey's, his background in the Anglican Church, he became disaffected with that perspective and became aligned with independent Christians who had a more enthusiastic kind of perspective on the world.
Because at this time, it is the Church of England.
Correct. He's born into the Church of England. His father was a parish clerk in the Church of England, a Sunday lector, reader. And Carey decided that he needed a more affecting kind of religion. And he became an independent, associated briefly with some mystics, then became a Baptist and a Baptist minister. associated with a particular Baptist who had a much more of a Reformed outlook, similar to many Presbyterians, except on the issue of baptism. Mm-hmm. And so Carey's outlook was an intentional combination, as Myron has mentioned, of theology, life, real life on the ground, social reform, that he saw all of these things as part of his mission. We often think of missionaries today going to preach. Carey thought of his entire life as a mission that would combine science, for example. He asked one fellow in America, why do you, you know, they were criticizing him for teaching science in Serampore College. And he asked, do you not teach your minister science in America? He saw no division between the study of Scripture and the study of science, the practice of social reform. They are all part of God's creation and part of his mission. So mission for him is a much broader category than what many people consider mission to be today. And for Carey, it's a lifelong commitment. It's not a week or two or a month. Mm-hmm. It's living among people and becoming one of those people in their environment.
And really, that example is something that's truly missing, like you said, in today's modern mission work and for most Christians, that the churchians, as Luke and I like to call them, they go to church on Sunday and then go have lunch and then go home and then go back the next Sunday. And that's just incredible that he was so ahead of his time. Even with science, because, of course, today a lot of scientists kind of ignore the fact that science was funded by the church in order to prove the existence of God. They realize this is a tool that can be used to show all the things that God has done. So again, at this time in history, for someone to recognize that but be vocal about it, growing up in the Church of England and converting, that's just an incredible legacy.
Yeah, science for Carey was an investigation of the works of God, and the works of God are around us. Mm. So for Carey, knowing about those works in some ways is as important as knowing what God has revealed in Scripture. He never raised science or anything else above Scripture, but he saw them cooperative kind of rhetoric, and we should not separate them is the lesson, I think, on that, is that life as a whole, we have a tendency in our society to be fragmented, and Carey gives us an intentional vision that all of it is whole under God in Christ.
Yeah, that he had such a holistic, as you said before, a holistic missiology, that his goal there was not just to see people's souls saved, but he wanted to improve the quality of life. Can you speak for a minute just to give people an idea? This was a man that was a cobbler and, you know, didn't have a great formal education. And the translations of the Bible into tons of languages, for people that don't understand, India is a cauldron of culture and language. Every single state has their own language. And Carey translated the Bible into many languages where he had not even been to those places.
Yes, Carey was very much, Carey and his colleagues, William Ward and Joshua Marshman, were completely committed to the notion of education, of language study, Bible translation as being a basis for transforming people in India and transforming India. And they devoted themselves with remarkable energy to producing a wide variety of Bible translations. Their translations range from Bibles in Pashtun, the languages, some of the languages that are spoken in Afghanistan, to a whole wide variety of Indian languages. And, of course, Marshman labored long and hard on grammars and dictionaries and a Bible in Chinese as well. And they saw all this as working together. They didn't see it as, I mean, they did street preaching. They did direct evangelism. They did not, they didn't see any separation in their work, I don't think. They saw it as part of a single advancing column, and they saw that being integrated into their understanding of the gospel and into their understanding, quite critically, of educating an indigenous ministry. They were totally committed to that. And so they were very radical. And that even carried over into many of their other endeavors. I mean, Carey's very famous for the fact that he was arguably the founder of the Agricultural and Horticultural Society of India. And he was committed to the notion that native Indians should not only be members of this, but officers in it. And so there was quite the comprehensive view that they took there in terms of their own cultural and social and intellectual education, and in terms of viewing really the gospel as a progressive force in India and not as something that was an interloper. I mean, there were plenty of complexities there because, of course, they had to deal with the British Empire and the British authorities and all that. But they were quite committed to that totality of mission. And it's quite fascinating. Carey is still viewed as one of the founders of what's called the Bengali Renaissance, and thus is on a stamp issued by the government of India in 1993.
Wow. Can you hold on through the break? We got a hard break here. I want to talk more about this, and I'll actually talk about the Carey Center. We continue our conversation with Dr. Benny Crockett and Dr. Myron Noonkester about William Carey. Tomorrow's Worldwide Carey Day, celebrating the 256th birthday of William Carey. 9 a.m. edition continues next. Stay with us on Super Talk Mississippi.
Listening to 9 a.m. edition on Super Talk Mississippi 97.3 and 99.3.
I want to thank Lydia Walters with Dixie Electric Power Association for joining us at the top of the hour. It's Michael Mergens, our studios in Hattiesburg, Luke Johnson in downtown Laurel. And we continue our conversation with Dr. Benny Crockett and Dr. Myron Noonkester about the life of William Carey. And tomorrow's Carey Day, celebrating the 256th birthday of William Carey, the namesake of William Carey University. And I kind of want to talk about that, how William Carey University decided to name itself after William Carey, even though it seems kind of obvious now, just talking about how revolutionary he was ultimately. But why did the university decide?
Well, in the early 50s, the predecessor institution was Mississippi Woman's College, and Dr. Ralph Noonkester was dean at that time. And when this college became owned and operated by the Mississippi Baptist Convention, the discussion carried on of what is it going to be named. It became coeducational, and he suggested it be named for William Carey, who is, for Baptist at least, and for anyone who's interested in missions, a go-to identity. And it was a brilliant suggestion because William Carey's life encompasses everything about an academic curriculum. And we've recently added a medical college. And one of the early stories about Carey was that there was a medical, Krishnapal became a Christian convert because of William Carey's colleague setting his arm in a broken shoulder or something. There's a connection to just about any academic program, and so Dr. Noonkester's suggestion has worn well for us, and I can't imagine changing that.
Yeah.
It's who we are, and that goes back to, I believe, 1953.
Wow.
And the school became William Carey College in 1953 and William Carey University in, I believe, 2006.
Let's talk about the Carey Center and what that is.
Well, I'll tell you how it started. In the summer of 2000, my colleague Myron and I were drinking coffee in my office, and he came in and said, "We need to do something with William Carey. We haven't done anything with Carey, you know, in a substantive scholarly way, and so why don't we start something?" So we started collecting memorabilia, and from that day until this day, that was in June of 2000, it's now over 17 years, we've been collecting memorabilia every week, and the museum is slam full of memorabilia.
Wow.
And it's rare books, teapots, newspapers of the day from Carey, historic Bibles, historic prints, artistic pieces, botany. It goes on and on.
I might add, I mean, it is really a world-class collection. We don't have, it's not as if we have collected a few knickknacks that people would like to come and look at. There's a depth and a breadth to the collection. We get consultation from folks from all walks of life all over the world. Everybody from homeschoolers trying to figure out how to do a report on William Carey to people at universities in South Korea or in Britain. Historians of science are interested in Carey.
Wow.
Folks who are interested in any way in Indian botany are interested in Carey. So we engage in all kinds of consultations, and our collection has been used in all manner of scholarly works, you know, running really across those various disciplines and enterprises.
That's incredible. How was it affected by the tornado? Obviously, it wasn't damaged, but as you're describing this, that's the first thing that crossed my mind. What if this was to happen again?
The building, we were fortunate that the tornado lifted a bit and only hit the roof, but then as it hit the roof, the water came in, and the walls were soaked full of water, and we had 2 to 3 inches of water in one of the galleries and in the lobby. We got that out. We thought we were okay with the collection, but then we learned from the Conservation Center from Chicago, who came down to do an appraisal and eventually took the collection away and restored 32 pieces of historic art. They indicated to us that the walls were full of water and that the water, through the humidity process, was seeping through the walls into the backs of some of the artistic pieces. Mm-hmm. So those were restored. The actual pieces were not damaged, but we're slowly getting back up to speed. The collection was restored, brought back. It was stored in Dallas and Chicago, and it's back in place, and we're awaiting other things to happen for the museum to be reopened.
Yeah.
So the short of it is the interior of the building had to be torn out. The collection was taken away while that was going on, and then it had to be rebuilt inside and the collection reinstalled. And I can tell you that Service Master Resource Management and the Conservation Center have done a fabulous job with the collection and the building. It looks as good as it ever has.
Well, I can attest to Service Master because I had a water leak earlier this year. They took care of it pretty well and saved a very elaborate guitar collection. So I can say that, yeah, they do fantastic work, and that's great to hear. Of course, incredible legacy and something that is important for people to know and understand, especially today, because I think Carey's approach and philosophy and belief is something that is greatly lacking.
I should mention we have a website that people should consult if they wish. It's just wmcarey.edu/carey. It's an elaborate collection online. If you can't come to the museum, we'd love to have you on our website. And there's a before and after of the tornado damage related to Donnell Hall.
Okay, I'm going to have to check that out. Dr. Benny Crockett, Dr. Myron Noonkester, thank you so much for taking the time out today. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Certainly educated us. And that's going to do it for today's 9 a.m. edition. We'll be back here tomorrow, Thursday already. So for Luke Johnson, I'm Michael Mergens. Till tomorrow, as always, be safe, be kind. Bye-bye.